I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
this
sucks less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
Bellator
Heavyweight Champion, the leader of
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So if you are a fan of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show, you know I am so excited about this next interview. I have said multiple times on the show, and I've kind of stuck with this for quite a while, but my favorite episode that we have ever done on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show is the first time that we had, and first and only time up until this point, that we had Kenny Florian on the show. And there were just so many reasons that I absolutely loved this episode. We might even get into some of those reasons maybe at the end of this episode or even in the commercial break. But something that was really cool, and I think we kind of reference it right at the beginning of the conversation, but I kind of argue that you wouldn't be listening to the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show right now had it have not been for that interview with Kenny Florian. He was off the air after we had recorded. He was so encouraging to me. I was very new to podcasting, and I still didn't have any real reason to keep podcasting and I really had no vision for what the podcast was going to be. It was just kind of something I was doing through COVID, and he gave me some encouragement, and it completely kept me consistent on doing the podcast. And there have been times that I even have thought about quitting doing the podcast, but I fall back to this conversation where he was just, for no other reason than he's a really cool guy, very encouraging. And so I'm always going to be greatly appreciative of that. But if you like the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show, you should be appreciative of it too. Because like I said, I don't know if it would, I really don't see us being almost 250 episodes in if it isn't for that specific conversation and the conversation after. But this time we get to kind of refresh, kind of do, you know, he's had a lot of life updates, just like most of us have since 2020. And we kind of get into some of those, but we also hit on some old topics. We hit on jiu-jitsu training method. We hit on things that make jiu-jitsu easier. We actually talk a lot of jiu-jitsu concept. We even get into seeing jiu-jitsu concept in things like Kenny, for the last 8 years, has been the host one of the commentators of BattleBots. And we kind of get into that, and we kind of talk about his martial arts perspective and kind of tying it into BattleBots. And so, man, this is just, again, such a fun conversation. And Kenny's just such a unique person, and so I couldn't recommend this episode anymore. If you guys enjoy this episode, the best way to show me that is to recommend it to a friend or to post it on your story, recommend it to all of your friends. And so hopefully you guys get as much out of this episode as I do, and I will quit rambling on this, and we will go ahead and get into today's episode, the interview with Kenny. Kenny Florian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, man. It has been 3 years. Last time we talked was when we were all locked inside. And now we're back to a little more real life, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's crazy how much has changed. Like, even probably my perspective of the time, of everything that was going on. But it's great, dude. First of all, it's congratulations on your ability to keep this going, and to see you grow throughout this process has been awesome, man. You're killing it, as I thought you would.
I really appreciate that, man. I don't know if you tell all the podcasters this, but it really was a significant thing for me when we got done recording last time, and you just gave me a second of your time and said, Josh, I think you could really be good at this. And at that point, I really hadn't committed to podcasting in any way. It was something I was really doing during the pandemic. And it's funny that one statement really, was a big game changer for me. I just really appreciate that.
That's awesome, man. I only said it because I meant it. So good job, man.
So I thought I was going to actually start in a different spot, but you just kind of had said, you know, that there's been a big perspective change. And, you know, I thought maybe then a better place to start would be the last time we talked, you and I really started talking about concept in jiu-jitsu training. And, and for me, it was something that was still new to me. And it was really, really helpful to me to kind of hear somebody. It was almost now with it. Now people teaching concept all the time, 3 years later, it is more common, but back then I feel like it was still very a taboo thing to talk about. It's like, oh no, you can't try to make jiu-jitsu simpler. It should always be a list of 1,000 techniques. And just for you, you know, you told me before that you get to train with Ryan Hall a lot and train at Lucas LaPree's gym. And so there's some just incredibly high level coaches and some incredibly high level jiu-jitsu minds. Over the last 3 years, has there been a shift in how you look at jiu-jitsu and kind of the concepts that you believe?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, training with those guys, first of all, you're going to learn a lot. It's like training with or competing against someone, I imagine, like someone on the level of, you know, the best chess players, right? If you make a mistake, those are the guys that are going to find it. So they're going to constantly test what you're doing and how you're doing it. I certainly think that I've expanded the ideas of certain concepts. Like I think I've just gone into more depth on things, on concepts. And then they, from training with them, seeing how they operate, you know, getting a chance to pick their brains. I think that you also get into a lot of the details, like, all right, well, that's true, but I obviously clearly made a mistake here. I was exposed here, or they're talking about in these terms. How true is that? How has that worked for me, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it has helped to question what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. And I think it's made my game much, much better. Unfortunately, I'm definitely not training as much as I was when we talked a while ago, not only because of life and all the other things that I have going on, but I've been really trying to focus on getting my body healthy first. I think what I was doing incorrectly, because I love jiu-jitsu so much, I would do my physical therapy and then at the same time be doing jiu-jitsu, and I would basically be undoing everything that I was doing in physical therapy. So I was kind of like just getting up the mountain, getting pushed back down, getting up the mountain, getting pushed back down. And I think there was a lot of weaknesses and vulnerabilities in my body that needed to get much stronger. So I was never really allowing for it to get stronger. I was just kind of healing, you know, getting it a little bit stronger and beating it up, you know. So anyway, so I've been really trying to focus on that. I've been getting back into training now slowly. I've been feeling great without the pain, which is awesome. So hope to be able to go deeper into that process. But I think more than anything else, what concepts have allowed me to do is problem solve on a much larger scale. And it's also allowed me to problem solve in the moment as it's happening to me with much better success than I was before. Certainly not perfect, but much better success than I was before. And it's also allowed me to be more creative. Like I feel like even with me not training as much as I was before, I feel like I'm able to play with recipes so much more. Like I feel like I'm that chef that like, okay, well, I don't have all the stuff that I need, but let's take this, I'll take this, I'll take that. And I can just make a pretty good meal, even with limited resources, if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes perfect sense to me. I feel like as I've shifted more into a conceptual teacher and just thinker in jiu-jitsu, without even needing to or caring about it, I've innovated way more than when I used to care about innovating on technique. Like the same way you see that, hey, fat makes a meal taste like this, and I can use butter, but I don't have it, so I'll use bacon grease today. And
100%.
I completely understand. So for you, last time we talked, you had like kind of the way you were teaching and the way you were training boiled down to five main concepts, or you had hinted at that that's how you had had it. Is that still, you know, you said you're digging deeper into those.
Yeah.
Would you say that you're still on those five main ideas, or are there, have the ideas evolved? Have you gained more? Have they boiled down to less? You know, where are you at with just how you see jiu-jitsu or grappling as a whole?
Yeah, I think that it's right about that, right about there. I think that that makes sense. I think that most of it can be boiled down to, you know, our base or base connection. And I'm not sure if we went into that or not, but
we did not.
Yeah. Okay. So that I kind of started coining the phrase for myself in base connection. And what I mean by that is, like, I don't know, I think it's important to identify terms, to have meanings of terms. Like people say like, okay, hey, you got to get up in base. You're like, well, what the hell does base mean? And what does connection mean? And what are those things? What's actually going on? Like, are there times that you're not getting up in base? In my opinion, no. We should always be in some kind of a base. Now, what does that mean? To me, I guess if I was going to boil it down to the simplest terms for people to understand, I would say it's the shape our body takes that's in relationship to the opponent and the floor, and how it influences the force vectors between you, your opponent, and the floor. So hopefully that made sense. But what I mean is, like, there's certain powers that are being transferred between me and my opponent. And those things can only happen with the floor, myself, and the opponent. If I'm not touching you in a certain way, then, like, I have no effect over you. Mm-hmm. If you're not touching me, you have no effect over me. So I need to be able to position my body in relationship to you and the floor in order to be strong, or to find that strongest position where I can start to transfer those powers onto you, as opposed to you transfer that weight or that gravity onto me. And if I'm on bottom, then I also need to find a way to manipulate those forces into my world, if that makes sense. And for me, any of the techniques that I want to do in those exchanges matters not if I don't have good base connection. So for me, this is at like the very core of everything that is going on in grappling, judo, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, whatever you want to call it. It's all the exact same thing. The physics aren't different for judo as opposed to jiu-jitsu or wrestling. It's the exact same physics that are going on. And it's just up to us to kind of like figure out ways to manipulate those forces into our favor.
So making sure I understand you correctly, it is, you know, I obviously, it is how much and where I am touching the floor and how much and where I am touching my opponent.
Yeah, exactly. And the locations of where you're doing it. For example, like, let's take something super simple. Let's take something super simple like a pin, like in wrestling, judo, jiu-jitsu, it's a side control. Okay. Where is our optimal amount of control? Like, where are the places that we can control, and what are the things that we're supposed to be doing to our opponents? Like, so let's take, let's say we have like a kesagatami, right? Or, you know, any type of side control, really. If I can pin their shoulders down to the mat without them getting underneath my center of mass, for example, then I should be able to keep them relatively pinned, like very, very well. Mm-hmm. So long as I'm staying pretty tight, and I'm, you know, their frames are kind of out of the picture for the most part, or at least they're very weak. Like, that's kind of the goal. Now I can kind of screw that up very easily by leaning my weight too much weight over you, where now your hips are able to get underneath my hips, and then you're able to manipulate my body. I can be too far away from you where, yeah, your shoulders might be pinned, but now you're allowed to get your legs back in the game. So, like, these are things that, like, I try to talk about things that are like, and it's hard to talk about necessarily without showing, but I think that there are certain things that like a concept for me, like a lot of people throw around the word concepts, but what they're really meaning is actually techniques still, like, or ideas. An idea isn't necessarily a concept in jiu-jitsu. Maybe we should be talking about more like fundamentals. Like the conceptual teaching is a methodology of teaching, but in that process, what you're really describing and talking about are like things that are true in jiu-jitsu, things that are always true and are probably true throughout all of the different positions. Because I don't think, like you mentioned those five things, like I don't think there's a whole lot of like 100% truths. There's a few, but those few that are true, you'll find them everywhere and probably even find them outside of jiu-jitsu themselves. Like I think that like they are so deep and true that you can find those principles like in many, many different modalities, in many different areas of life. And that's where it becomes extremely powerful. Like I've learned so much from like learning outside of jiu-jitsu and being like, oh, like even like something like BattleBots, where I'm like, okay, well, if this is true in this form of combat, let me see if this is true in jiu-jitsu. And sure enough, it is. Like, so I think that that's kind of the things that we should be chasing and learning to discover, because those are the things that we can always rely on to be 100% certain. And there's not a whole lot, just because also like other guys are good and other guys have good techniques and they may not have like a great understanding or depth of concepts, but man, they just know how to move their body and they know a lot of techniques and they have a lot of experience. So that alone can be a problem. The key is now like, how do I take them outside of their comfort zone of where they know, and I can kind of play with certain positions and tease certain things like it's similar to what they know, but it actually isn't, if that makes sense.
It does. So I just one more follow-up on base connection and this idea. And I know it is very hard to, you know, explain jiu-jitsu, something that is done mostly by feel without
getting
to feel it, you know? And, just something that I've noticed as more people there've been more of these like super fight grappling matches in a cage, like in 1FC and things like that. Does the cage change this idea of base connection because the wall or the fence is there?
Great question. So I would say no, it does not. It's just a different dimension of what we're doing on the floor. So I think the floor is that second, I guess it could be your enemy or it could also be your friend. But in this case, it is that second friend that's allowing you to be that much more successful in grappling positions. So, you know, my use of the floor allows me to pin. It allows me to create force. It allows me to get balanced. It allows me to stabilize. And that same kind of concept is true with the cage. For example, like if I'm like, you can consistently run away. If we're in a massive field, you can always get away from me. You always have something behind you that you like, that space behind you to kind of retreat to, whether it's positioning your legs, your head, your butt, your feet behind you to create those forces into your favor. Now you can also do that with a cage, but if I'm able to position, let's say my shoulders and your hips, or if I'm able to like pin your shoulders to the cage, I can restrict how you move and when you move. It doesn't mean I'm going to win it every time, but it does mean that I can at least restrict your movement to a certain extent. So I think in my view, I think the cage and the floor are operating very similarly.
That makes sense. I just notice in jiu-jitsu that seems like this big shocking thing to a lot of really great grapplers. And maybe I don't know if they're just not training and understanding how that crease between the floor and the cage can just stop all your movement and how much that can really hurt the bottom player. But I just, that's something I noticed. And so I'm just curious as, you know, as your thought on that. But you just mentioned about like noticing that relationship in jiu-jitsu where, you know, how I always say it is when you get good enough at jiu-jitsu, you get good enough at grappling, everything becomes jujitsu. You know, everything that you see in the world becomes jujitsu. But you also reference like what you're noticing with BattleBots. You've been commentating on BattleBots for, I believe, 8 years now.
Yeah, correct.
And so what are some things, what are some keys that if there was a sneaky BattleBots builder that was like, oh my gosh, Kenny gave us a jiu-jitsu concept here that is going to help us win. What is something that you notice or some things that you notice that seem?
I'll give you a simple example, and then I'll equate something to what's true maybe in BattleBots, but not necessarily in jiu-jitsu. So, you know, anytime you see a collision, you know, between two robots that are coming together at high speeds, you know, they're always made out of different materials. And these are 250-pound robots. They may not look very big, but like they're made out of AR steel. Like it's very impressive. And they also have like intricate electrical wiring that's going on inside, different tanks, you know, like gas tanks and fuel tanks. And so, you know, you want to be able to protect those things. So, you know, how you take energy is extremely important, meaning those collisions over time can do a serious damage to the internals of the robot. Now, for me, there's three things that we can do with energy. So any force vector that's coming at us, anything that's leaning on us, we can either block energy, we can deflect energy, or we can send it on its way. Right. And that's kind of what we're always doing with jiu-jitsu. For example, let me equate that to like jiu-jitsu or grappling. If you're trying to take me down, I'm sprawling. For me, the way I see a sprawl is really more of a block. I'm creating frames with my hips and getting my legs back. And I'm basically preventing you from driving me backwards to put me on my back. And then I'm also kind of dealing with walls. I don't want you to kind of turn the corner on me. So I'm kind of creating these frames and aligning my body with you so you can't quite get an angle for an advantage. Does that make sense? So I'm blocking that energy almost head on. Okay. So that's one example of blocking a certain force that's coming at us. So then the other thing would be to kind of deflect. And I believe that an underhook is one of the best deflection tools. There are points where I'm blocking with my underhook, with my shoulder, for example, and not the arm itself. Like an underhook is powerful because of my shoulder, which is connected to my torso. It's not powerful because of the lever of the arm. If you're leaning on the lever of my arm, I can't really move you. You're heavy all of a sudden. But if I have my shoulder, I can actually move you and I can actually deflect that force away from me and then slowly work my way over to your back. So that'd be an example of a deflecting type of a position. Does that make sense? You with me so far? Okay. And then the other one would be like, let's say something like a John Wayne sweep, right? That would be an example of sending the energy on its way. You're coming at me, or a tomonage from the standing position, where you're coming at me, you're trying to take me down. And all I do, like a butterfly guard sweep, is I take that energy, I get underneath your center of mass, and I send it exactly where you want it to go, right? And that's the most ideal way of dealing with energy. We're not always in a position to do that, but that's the most ideal way because I don't take any brunt of the force. I'm using your force against you, and I'm actually allowing you to go exactly to where you wanted to go with minimal energy. I'm actually using your energy against you, right? So instead of like, boom, colliding, that can take its toll on you, right? That, you know, that is still going to be a weight that we have to support. So those are kind of really the only things that we can do with any kind of force that's coming at us. And in BattleBots, you see that all the time. And again, when you see those colliding forces, those take the most toll on your body. It takes the most toll on the robot. And then you'll see certain like wedge-like formations where, you know, the robot's flying right at you and like the thing just basically uses you as a jump and it just goes right over you and never does any impact onto the robot itself. And then you have like those flipper style robots that scoop underneath you. Now, the difference between some of like the flipping style robots and us humans when we're trying to sweep is, you know, literally a robot can get like its flipping part of the lever Like it only needs like a half an inch or an inch, and it can flip you up in the air like 16 feet. So those things are so powerful that it can lift you. It can shoot you up into the air. Our arms, our legs, our feet don't really have that ability. We can't just like flip you up in the air with our body. We're just not that strong. But so we have to use more of our ability to kind of get underneath their center of mass. We need to kind of get our hips underneath their hips in order to kind of manipulate and move them.
I love that analogy. That was a really good analogy.
Yeah. And like Ryan said this best, and I love how he puts it. It's, you know, we're robbing them of their connection to the floor. The less of your body that's on the floor, the easier it's going to be for me to kind of move you. Like if you're like in freestyle wrestling, you'll see when they're belly down, they literally try to get every piece of their body on the floor so you cannot get underneath them. So they're trying to get as heavy as possible, not only so you can't get underneath them, but they can also shift their weights to various parts of the floor, right? It's like, if you're trying to lift that right side of my body, I can shift to that right side or left side. I can kind of play with those forces, but I'm only doing that because I have the floor underneath me. So, you know, there's just so much to learn with all the grappling arts. Like one thing that really helped me a lot was watching Bouvai Sarsaitiev in wrestling. And you can go on YouTube and just spend hours looking at him. And you're like, he looks like he's doing jiu-jitsu. Like he doesn't even look like he's wrestling. He's just like screwing with everybody. He lets you grab him any way you want. Like he doesn't even care. He just literally walks forward, allows you to get any kind of connection. He's like, cool, I have an answer for that. I have an answer for that. I have an answer for that. And it's just unbelievable to watch. And you realize, oh, like everyone talks about grips and stuff, and those are important. But what does it mean when he lets you get any grip you want and he can still mess with you? Like there's something deeper going on, and watching him really opened my eyes to what was transferring in that regard.
Anybody else you watched that really helped you just draw these kind of concepts?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Ryan Hall was a huge influence. Marcelo Garcia was a huge influence in watching him. Hodger Gracie was huge. But I think it probably goes back to Hicks and Gracie. And Hickson was a guy that always was talking about, you know, invisible jiu-jitsu and you know, concepts and things like that. I don't know if he was as forthcoming as some of the other people that are now, but he definitely, like he showed you, he was doing things that are extremely simple and he was just messing with everybody back in the day. Like he was so far ahead of everybody. And I had the opportunity, I think in like 19, but no, so it was probably early 2000s to train with one of Hickson's black belts, Henry Akins. And he really started teaching a lot of these concepts. I was figuring out a little bit of some of them, and he was able, he allowed me to kind of go much deeper with some of the things and gave me some great ideas into getting into other like territories as far as jiu-jitsu and grappling was concerned. So with me, I was like, okay, yes, Hickson is doing something very different. And Henry Akins was kind of one of the first people to introduce me to that. I think it was early 2000. So it must've been like 2002, 2003, something like that.
It's funny that you bring up Henry. My dad has always been really big on buying his products and trying to learn the stuff that he teaches. And this year, while we were on vacation in Florida, he was teaching a seminar. And so I was like, yeah, I would love to go. And it was two-day seminar. And it really was just completely game changing for me, understanding his thoughts on weight distribution. I actually, a couple later got to train with him again in Vegas, during Master Worlds. And it was, you know, it truly was one of those things where I went, oh, Hickson must have been doing something different. What he is showing is different.
It is. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so just, kind of a shift. We kind of talked a little bit about you doing commentary and the things that you do now. And, you know, obviously you had a whole life before commentary, you know, fighting, you know, being on the Ultimate Fighter, fighting in the UFC for a very long time and having a lot of success doing this. But something, you know, and you see this now, and I think you've always seen this in every sport, but the difference with the UFC, with fighting in particular, is the toll that it can take on your body and the toll that it can take on your brain. But there was a time where you knew it was time to hang up your gloves. You knew it was time to stop fighting. And then from there, you didn't go back on it. And that's less common, it seems like. First, what was that like when you knew that it was time? How was that conclusion you had gone to? Was it a, man, I think I have a little more, I think I could do a little more? Or was it something that you just knew definitely?
Yeah. So I had made a decision that when I realized that if my love for what I was doing went away, I would retire. And then the second thing was, if my body didn't allow me to train the way I wanted to train, then it would be time to retire. So if one of those things went away, I knew it would be time. And my body definitely gave up before my mind did, or before my passion, my willingness to train did. And it was just, you know, and it was happening over time. Like, my back first went out in 2007. So I had been dealing with a really bad back injury from 2007. Is that right? Or maybe six. Yeah, 2007 to 2011, when I ultimately retired, end of 2011. So it was just, you know, it was the worst back injury I'd experienced in 2011. It was after the Jose Aldo fight. I was training, and my back just was really, really, really bad. And lucky for me, I had a job outside of that, commentating for the UFC and working for Fox Sports and all those things. I had great opportunities, so I'm extremely grateful for that. But I don't know if I was, like, really ready. But I knew that what I didn't want to do was go out and train and give 60% or 70% or 80% or even not, like, you know, like, I'm not physically gifted. Like, I'm not the strongest dude. I'm not the most flexible dude. I'm not the fastest dude. I have pretty good mobility. I can you know, pick things up pretty well. But, you know, if my body is compromised that much more, this sport is just too damn difficult and too dangerous to go in there and give it half-assed. And, like, I also demand so much of myself in training. Like, that was my edge, was training more than most people, you know? And when I wasn't able to do that, I was like, well, there goes my advantage and there goes my career. I'm not going to go in there for a paycheck. I was lucky enough that I didn't have to fight for a paycheck, because I had other opportunities outside of that. But yeah, that's kind of where my head was at. So I knew pretty early on that my biggest opponent really was time. I had started late and I was restricted as to, you know, I didn't start when I was 16, 17 in MMA. I started quite late, like 28. That was my first MMA fight. So I knew that when I got to work in MMA, I had to really, really get to work. And when I wasn't able to train 2-3 times a day, 6 days a week, I knew that it was time for me to retire.
Hey guys, Josh McKinney here. I just wanted to interrupt this podcast really quick and tell you guys about something we have going on at simplifyingjujitsu.com. So this conversation that I had with Kenny Floor, and like I said, it's the second time that we have been on a podcast together. And the first time 3 years ago was really when I started to commit to conceptual jujitsu teaching, conceptual jujitsu training. And there are other people that have affected me on that journey. But if you listen to that first podcast, I really was just on the cusp of starting to understand conceptual jujitsu teaching and conceptual jujitsu learning. And what's funny is, fast forward till now, almost the end of 2023, and I get to travel the country teaching this concept of distance as it comes to guard passing, this idea of distance that, if you understand correctly, will keep you from getting swept or submitted while you are playing top, and it will help you pass guys that you should not be passing because they've had great guards and they have trained way longer than you. But just by understanding distance, you can take the passes that you already like and you can apply them to this idea. We call the idea chest over chest. It's actually a few other ideas. It's chest over chest. It's behind the knees. It is in front of the thighs. It is excessive distance. There's all kinds of other kind of key concepts that we explain. But all it is me explaining the framework of what high-level guard passers do in order to be able to play in the guard for a whole 10-minute round and play in the best, most dangerous guards in the world and not get swept or submitted, and to be able to pass the best guards in the world. And so what this is right now is it is a group of seminars that I have taught, and it is available at simplifyingjujitsu.com. I will link it in the description. But with these seminars, it's two different chest over chest seminars. There's a ton of question and answer. There's some live rolling footage. And then on top of that, there is an additional seminar on upper body control. It is understanding what we call the pinch. There's a clip of it that went kind of viral on YouTube where we talk about that underhooks are useless, or at least the way that people teach you underhooks are useless. And that teaches you how to pin people. And all this is tied together in one package only at simplifyingjujitsu.com. And you guys, I promise you, you will absolutely love it. And if you go to that link, there's also two 15-minute vlogs of me teaching these seminars where you're going to get a little taste of what you will learn from these chest over chest seminars. And again, these are only available at simplifyingjujitsu.com. Be sure to check them out. I guarantee you will absolutely love them. If you don't, send me an email and I will give you your money back, and there's no risk to you. But I promise this is going to help you understand what is happening when you are on top. It's going to teach you what to do with your hands. It will keep you from getting swept or submitted. You absolutely should check these seminars out. Only available at simplifyingjujitsu.com. Be sure to check the link in the description. Let's get back to this interview. So you said, the passion was still there, though. Have you, and if so, what has there been able to still fulfill that passion in other things? Have you been able to do that with other things, with other projects that you work on, or with other things?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was extremely hard though for the first couple of years. And also in the back of my mind, I was like, hey, maybe I get healthy and I'm able to fight again. You know, just because you have that competitive spirit for so long, like, you don't want to say goodbye to that. And so it was just an uphill battle trying to get healthy for so many years, still is. But I think that it was really difficult finding something to replace that level of passion. I was able to put my passion into commentating and things like that. I think it took me a little while to continue searching in that regard. I was still interested by the sport, but I don't know if I was giving the same kind of I'm learning as a martial artist to do this, as opposed to bringing just what I know in this moment. So it's a different mentality than saying, all right, I'm a teacher that's never going to learn anymore. I'm going to be a teacher and show you what I know, as opposed to having this relationship with yourself and go, no, I'm a student first. I'm always going to be a student. I'm here to learn. I'm here to evolve. I'm here to see what's going on. And then whatever I do know, I'm going to build off of that and transfer that knowledge to other people as a teacher, as a commentator. So I think it took me a little while just because I was almost in mourning of myself as a competitor. I remember crying at one point, being like, I can't believe I'm not training right now. I can't believe I'm not able to do the sport that I absolutely love to do, because I was just lost. It wasn't Monday, it wasn't Tuesday, it wasn't Wednesday, it wasn't Thursday for me when I was training. It was strength and conditioning day and jujitsu day and takedown day and MMA sparring day, or whatever. You know what I mean? I didn't even know what day it was. I just knew what I was doing. And so in a lot of ways, I was institutionalized. I would just, I love that feeling of simplicity of every day I had a plan on what I was going to do. And when that was taken away, I was like, shit, I got all this time. I have so many things to do. Like, I don't even know where to start. Like, everything for me was revolved around training, and now it didn't. That went away, and I was like, man, what the heck do I do? And so it took me a couple of years of getting healthy and finding other things to do within that realm of going, all right, man, it's time to get back to being a student, and learning and training when you can. And then over time I would get healthier, and I'd have my, you know, ups and downs with my body, but I am happiest when I'm able to train and do martial arts style things, whether it's teaching, training, exploring in the lab, whatever it is. So that is still the thing that I enjoy most, and not able to do it as much, but I've been able to kind of fill some of those gaps with, you know, broadcasting, podcasting, and teaching, and weapons training, like, you know, pistols, rifles, things like that.
So yeah, it's almost like it seems to be like this death of the person that you were, right? And
yeah.
What are some things, some conversations, some people that helped you make that transition from, you know, who you were as a fighter versus who you became, you know, as a martial artist, as a commentator, as a podcaster, as all these other things that you do now?
Yeah, great question. I think the easy answer is for me to go, well, everybody I trained with, or everyone I talked to about martial arts. But the reality is like, there are definitely some pivotal people that helped me. First of all, like Sean Williams, when I was in Los Angeles, he invited me to his gym. It was like, just come in whenever you want. And having that luxury of just going into a gym whenever you want, training is what helped that. And, you know, Mac Danzig, another guy who was still fighting in MMA, and he would coming into Sean Williams, and we'd kind of come in and train, exchange techniques, and you know, throw ideas back and forth. And then Ryan Hall hitting me up out of the blue, out of nowhere, saying he wanted to come in and learn some MMA. And I was like, I will only teach you MMA if you teach me jiu-jitsu. And that's when I was really kind of coming back into the sport and said, I have this opportunity to train with Ryan Hall. I'm going to start from scratch and really just shut up and listen. So he was pivotal in that process and has been throughout. And trying to think, I mean, obviously Lucas Lepre today. So, you know, those are kind of the people that really kind of helped me along the way to go, hey, this is when you're happiest. You know, this is when you are being a part of that process and you are learning and evolving. And, you know, I've been really trying to push myself to continue to look deeper and deeper into that process.
At this point, do you still have times where you miss fighting?
I do. I think that for me, what I realized and try to remind myself of is I love problem solving. You know, I wouldn't say I'm a math guy by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm not sure in the math realm I like problem solving, but I do like hands-on, like physical problem solving now, like whether it's doing, you know, electrical work around my house or working on my car or, you know, tinkering with guns or, you know, problem solving on the mat of like, all right, how do I solve for this? What is going on? What are we trying to do here? Like those things excite me and get me going. And I tend to get very obsessive with those kind of activities. And yeah, so I enjoy doing that. I think, I don't know if I answered your question, but that's, yeah.
I think you did. I think just in, you know, in that this is just something that has become more interesting to me as I have, you know, aged a little bit as a jiu-jitsu competitor, and you just realize more and more, oh yeah, this is not sustainable forever, at least at this level. You know, in jiu-jitsu, what's cool is you can start to go into master's divisions. You can start to almost lower the intensity. But you know, MMA doesn't seem to have that same ability.
Right.
But with kind of, you know, you getting to do some coaching and, you know, we've talked a little bit before, that you do still do some coaching, Do you notice that the almost the competitiveness is there through coaching, or do you feel like it is a different way of looking at problem solving?
I think it's a different way of looking at problem solving. And also, like, and this is where I've struggled with certain things with like my own limitations, because, you know, you also carry with you like a certain mental intensity and competitiveness, like more so for myself, like not necessarily like I want to be better than that person, but I'm trying to be the best version of myself, right? So I'm trying to push myself the most that I can. And I've been stupid with that. I've gone way too far. Like I remember when I competed against Vitor Shell and Hibero, like I hadn't competed in the gi forever and ended up going on an 18-hour flight to Abu Dhabi with the norovirus, thinking I was going to compete at a high level and be like, I could do this, bro. I could do anything. I fought MMA. Like, I'll be fine. And you're not fine. So there's, or like, my back's sore, but like, I'm just going to train for 3 weeks. And yeah, I'll train with you, like 250-pound guy. Like, that's a good, like, no, stupid decision. Like, you know, so finding that balance of like, all right, am I being tough or am I being stupid? And it's been difficult for me to find that balance sometimes. But I think that like more than anything, I'm trying to push the barriers of like my understanding of what jiu-jitsu is, how I can get it to work, and also how I can use, well, how I can be as efficient as possible at 47 years old, you know, against anybody, you know? So I've really tried to like reel it in as far as physical limitations, but also try not to think limitations mentally in certain ways of like, all right, how can I make this more beautiful? Or how can I use less energy? Or how can I just go in off the street right now and be able to compete well against excellent black belts? You know, like, so not necessarily I'm like trying to beat everybody, but like, how do I make sure that I have a jiu-jitsu that is going to be fine no matter what is happening? And the injuries have actually, the physical limitations have actually allowed me to do that in a certain way of like, all right, man, like I can't be using so much energy here. I can't be supporting weight in this manner because my back is going to fail. Like, how do I become more efficient with this, you know, debilitating injury that I have?
That's something that was so interesting for me learning from Henry Akins was, he claims that in training with Hickson, and he was around the entire time, he mm-hmm. says like, yeah, I don't think he reached his prime until his 40s. And, and to hear that is so bizarre, you know, when you're around jiu-jitsu guys that seem to hit their prime at 30, you know, and, you know, seem to start to physically diminish.
That's amazing. I felt that too. Like, I seriously feel like technique wise, you know, this Kenny Florian, even at 47 with his old body, old fat body, is way better than the Kenny Florian in his prime. Like, it wouldn't even be close in my opinion. But so I found that to be true. What's interesting that Hickson, that's the case with Hickson, is that he's been training since he was like 2 years old. You know what I mean? Like, he's been training since he was a fetus, and he still found that, like, I don't know. I think like great genius and great greatness really comes late in life. Like, and they say that, I think there's a saying like that, like true genius, like really happens much later than we actually think. And, you know, I guess there's certain people say there's certain areas or ages of prime in like chess and like, you know, maybe like, you know, math or certain things, but like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I think it all depends on like the plasticity of our brain and how we're thinking about things, how we're training. And I don't know.
So because I know I'll get hate mail from a bunch of 40-year-olds that are going, hey, if you don't dig a little deeper on this, but do you have any tips for training as you kind of age, and not only training, but actually getting better at jiu-jitsu as you age?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big one for me was realizing that I didn't have to squeeze the shit out of things to be effective, that I didn't have to squeeze the hell out of things to get it to stay in place, that I could actually just place my body and let that do the work for me. Like, even like to this day, first few rounds, man, I'm not really breathing crazy heavy unless I'm like out of my element and not focusing and not really like, I don't know, like maybe playing into someone else's game. Like, and that happens. I'm not perfect at all. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I'm getting tired. But then I'm like, no. Like, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's a different thing. But if I'm focused on like myself and what I'm supposed to be doing, I rarely am really breathing hard. Like, I can go in and do, 15, 20, 30 minute rounds and I'll be fine. I don't think that really would have been the case. Like in my late 20s, I'd be like, I need to get in shape, bro. Like, now I'm like fat and, body isn't really in great shape, but I can go in there and be super efficient and use minimal energy and be highly effective. And I think a lot of it has to do with not having to squeeze and grab and pull so much. I can allow my weight to do a lot of that work for me instead. And again, not a perfect process for me at all. I don't know everything. That's definitely the case. But I definitely have found that I'm way more efficient with my movement and how I apply things than I was even in my physical prime.
And that makes so much sense, because if you are efficient in your movement, it'll also allow you to train more and, continue to get better.
Absolutely. Even like in regards to position, right? Base connection. I can either, if you're leaning on me, let's say you're passing my guard or something, I could be like bench pressing you off of me. I could be holding your weight in a way that's not efficient. Like, if the structure of my body isn't aligned, I'm like having to use my core. I'm having to use little muscles. I'm having to like hold Josh in place and keep him away from me. And I'm like, I keep like bench pressing you. It's like, oh dude, that was awesome, man. Josh didn't pass your guard. You're like, yeah, but I'm freaking exhausted, or there is, me kind of just like, Mr. Miyagi my way around you and kind of deflecting you and, using minimal energy, and then you're still not passing my guard. So like there's two different things. A lot of times we look at the end result as opposed to the process of what actually transpired in that. So, or I can align myself structurally. So you're leaning on me and I'm like, yeah, cool. I'm not even breathing. I'm fine. I'm just holding Josh back, but I'm aligned with my body. The structure of my body is doing the work, as opposed to the little muscles or my core that's struggling and squeezing and gripping and grabbing. So finding those little things and trusting your body to do the work, and also not being afraid, because through that process, you're going to get your guard passed, and you're going to get frustrated, and you're going to get passed, and you're going to get tapped. But it's like resisting the urge of going, don't go back to your old self. Don't go back to your old self. Search into these new spaces. Just trust it. It's going to happen. Just keep doing it. Don't think about like how this person's doing against you. Just think about what you want long term as opposed to short term. And I think that's one thing that I've really tried to, do. And it's tough because your ego gets involved as a competitor. I'm like, I'm not going to let this young kid go in there and beat me. I'm going to match his physicality. And then I'm like, I just felt like I spazzed my way through that round. And yeah, maybe I did okay, or maybe I did fine. But I just feel like I wasn't really doing true martial arts, as opposed to me being flowy. And let's say like not as much transpired, but I felt like I was really efficient. And that is more successful to me than going out there and tapping someone 80 times. Like, if I'm not breathing at the end of the round, and let's say I caught you once or nothing really transpired, I'll take that as a win over me spazzing and tapping that person 80 times.
That's super interesting. So I like that idea of thinking of the long term and not the short term. Like, kind of how I'm hearing it from you is like, what you're seeking to get out of martial arts, out of jiu-jitsu at this point is, being really good at it. And really good really is efficiency. Cause even as a black belt, I notice that there are times that I'll go with somebody who I am on paper substantially better than at jiu-jitsu, but you fall into this, not being willing to relinquish an inch because you're trying to force something specific to happen, or you're trying to keep something specific from happening. And it really will ruin your training for the day. It can beat up your body way worse. And it just is not good jiu-jitsu.
Exactly, man. And you know, I see it very similarly to investments. Like you can be a trader and you can look for little things to like get your money in and then take it out, make your little money and take it out, make your little money, take it out, as opposed to be like, all right, like what are the dominating like companies that are going to be here forever? What are the companies that are going to be here like long after you're dead? Like Google, Apple, like, you know, assuming they keep on this trajectory, like you want to invest in companies like that, that are going to be long-term wins, that like, no matter what, they're always going to be ahead of everybody else. They're always going to be like the leading networks in their fields. And that's what you want to do, as opposed to try to like, look for ways to make like short-term money, short-term gains. The reality of what we're trying to do is like, no. Like we're trying, if you're a martial artist, you're trying to achieve mastery. You're trying to be a master. And then we need to ask ourselves, what does a master actually look like? And how do we get there? As opposed to being like, I just want to be good today.
That, man, that's a callback to Sean Williams, who you referenced. When I was a purple belt, I got to train with him. And I remember him giving me that first idea of what it means to roll without strength. And he explained it in a sense of, one day your physicality is going to diminish. You will not be strong. You will not be fast. You may not even be flexible. But if you think about the things that will still be there, you know, your weight distribution and your, and he broke it down to a few other thoughts. And he's like, your technique, your timing, those things can still be there. You know, even once everything physical diminishes, that is what real jiu-jitsu is, or that's what real martial arts is. And
definitely,
you know, it's the same thing that it seems like you're explaining.
Absolutely.
So I just have two questions left for you. One is a little more random. I didn't work it into the conversation as much, but there was a very aged well prediction that you made the last time you were on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. And you, we were talking about Isaac Dordelin, and you said, yes, I think, actually you didn't say, I think, you said something along the lines of, I am sure that he will be a world champion one day. And what is interesting is he was not at that point. I don't know if he had ever even placed at Black Belt Adult Worlds. And since then he has won the worlds and has just been, you know, even, you know, late in his age, late in his adult career, really went off. And so my question is, what is the thing, or what are some things that you noticed in him that made you so confident to be able to say that?
Yeah. You know, first of all, probably got lucky. No, just kidding. I think that for whatever reason, I think I'm relatively good at picking out certain talents before other people recognize them. I think. I think that's like one of the few gifts I have, I think, is like recognizing like they're being value before anybody else kind of sees that there's value there. And Isaac to me struck me as someone who, number one, works extremely hard and cares about the process and how he's doing things. So I think that he is also really willing to go outside and look for knowledge wherever he can get it. And then he also is very talented. And I think that when you have all of those things and you talk about experience, like he had been training for a very long time since he was a kid, and he'd always been willing to work outside of his comfort zone. Like he went from one school to another school to seek the best people, the best minds and all that stuff. And just from rolling with him, I could tell that, he had all of those elements in place and had the infrastructure around him to be able to get to that level. You know, whether, of course, you know, training under Cobrinha is going to help. Training with all the people that Cobrinha has trained is going to help. Going and training with guys like Mike Musumeci and, you know, all these other guys that he's trained with and competed against, like, yeah, man, like I just could tell that he was going to be elite in his weight class. There was just no question about it. And I remember us having conversations about concepts and things like that, and seeing how he's thinking about things and maybe pushing him on some of those things. And hopefully that was helpful to him. But, and then also he's just a good kid, man. He was a good guy who's always been Very nice, but really, really a hard worker and just trains his ass off. So to me, all of those things were present, and I knew he was knocking on that door, and to see him achieve that was an awesome sight, man. And I haven't trained with Isaac in a long time, but hopefully I'll get a chance to go back and learn some more from him and train with him. And but it's great to see him doing so well, and I think he'll continue to do well. Almost won it again.
That's really cool. So another, I told you I had two questions, but this caused a follow-up.
No sweat, man.
Just a thought on your, you said you feel like you're good at kind of seeing those things in people. Would you say that this is just something that was natural for you? You've always been able to notice that? Or would you say that there's anything that you kind of have done or have gotten better at to be able to kind of to quote unquote predict the future, or just to kind of see, what those talents are?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. Honestly, I think a part of it was a gut feeling, like just certain intuition things that are speaking to me. The other thing is, like, having been a competitor for a long time, played soccer, my whole life and through college and stuff like that. I don't know. I guess I had a decent handle on like who's special, like either. And it's not always the same thing. Like, it's not just like, oh, physically they're special, or, mentally they're special, or it's usually like, I don't know, like a variety of things that kind of, point to them just being different than other people. So I think that I've been relatively good at understanding that, and just, I'll also kind of I'll try to go into depth and figure out what those things are over time, and I get more information, as we go. So it's not necessarily immediate, but I think that sometimes it's just the way they're thinking about it. Sometimes it's the way they're moving. Sometimes it's their ability to compete under pressure, or when their pressure's on, how they're doing, so it's kind of a variety of things. And for me, whatever it is, I find that, I think the greatest assumption we can make, and this sounds a little like negative, but I try to work under the assumption that everyone is wrong. and then when I find certain things of people who are doing things differently, thinking about things differently, that's when I'll like poke and probe and go, why are you thinking that way? And then if I kind of like, yeah, that's going against what everyone else is doing, but to me it sounds correct, I'm like, that's the person. So I try to find those outliers, or those people that are kind of doing things differently. And to me, I go, all right, well, like, not everyone can be successful. Clearly not everyone is successful. Like, the podium only has three spots. And then there's only one at the top. So, there's not a lot of Kobe Bryants out there. There's not a lot of Michael Jordans out there. What makes them different? And you want to look for those people that are doing things differently. Doesn't mean they're always doing things correctly, but you always want to look for those people that are kind of, they're not, not only are they good at their sport, but they're doing things that are like beyond what everyone else is doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, almost people that kind of transcend the game. People that
right, like, look at Gordon Ryan, for example. Like, there's no one who's even close to him right now, in my opinion. There's no one that I can even say that, like, this guy probably has a good shot at beating Gordon Ryan. Like, that's how good Gordon is. That's a testament to him, obviously, and his work ethic and his talent and all that stuff. But like, clearly there's factors there that are just that separate him from other people, and those are the people that you kind of want to look towards and go, all right, how do I learn from what he's doing? And not to say everyone could do that, but those are the people that you kind of want to look for that are moving the game forward, not just like themselves doing well, but they're pushing jiu-jitsu in a different area.
Man, that's a really good answer to finding talent. But I always like on the show, I always like to have a kind of a finishing question. And it's been the same for the last 100 or so episodes. And so for you, I know you've gotten to speak to so many great jiu-jitsu minds at this point. You've done martial arts for, how long have you done martial arts for?
Gosh, I guess almost 30 years now.
Man, so yeah, for me, 30 years, yeah. A lifetime you've done martial arts.
Yeah.
And for you, if I ask you, and what kind of just springs to mind, what is some of, or what is the best jiu-jitsu advice that you have ever gotten?
Gosh. The best advice that I've ever gotten is, you know, obviously I'm going to have a little bit of recency bias and I bring him up a lot, but he has been someone that's inspired me a lot. I think Ryan Hall, just saying something as simple of like staying connected at all times in grappling, of never disconnecting. And I think through that process, it's like there is no escape of resetting, that once you find a good connection, a real grappler is never going to stray away from that. They're going to let it play out. You know, you'll hear a lot of wrestling coaches, you know, say wrestle, even if they're like, let's say they're in like all fours and the other person's on top. And what they're really meaning, I think, in my opinion, is that never giving up on any position at all. There's always an answer. And instead of like trying to run away from a situation, find a way to deal with what's going on in that moment. And I think that's super important for life in general, meaning like if there's a problem that you're encountering, now you can run away from it and you can put it away for a period of time, but eventually it's going to take advantage of you. Eventually you are going to succumb to that thing unless you address it. And it's always best to just address it in the moment. And that happens with grappling positions. Like instead of like trying to disconnect and just get the heck out of there, how do you stay connected and find a way to deal with that? And I think that like, instead of running away, you're going to see much more. If you stay connected, you're going to experience much more. You're going to feel much more. And you're going to really figure out if you have the technique or wherewithal to get out of there. So I think that like, just staying connected, whatever position happens, stick with it, figure a way out from here, as opposed to being like pushing them away and running away, if that makes sense.
That does. And even applying it to life. I love that.
Yeah.
man, Kenny, thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything you want to say to finish?
No, Josh, thanks so much for having me, man. Always awesome to speak with you. And again, excellent job, man. Super proud of what you're doing. And for those that are interested in like learning a little bit more about like how I see jiu-jitsu, if you guys want to check out KennyFlorianMartialArts.com, KennyFlorianMartialArts.com, you get, I think there's like a promo code YouTube or something like that, where you get a percentage off my instructional for anyone who's interested in that, where I kind of talk about some of the fundamentals and basics of jiu-jitsu. But other than that, thank you guys for all the support. You can hit me up on social media if you have any questions or anything like that. And best of luck with the podcast, man. You're killing it.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks, Josh.
And that is the episode. Thank you guys for listening to this one. Of course, big thank you to Kenny for being on the show again. It is just, if there's one thing that I have gotten out of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show, it is getting to have some kind of friendships with people that I never would have been able to have friendships with. I never would have been able to have conversations with. And you get to learn so much when you get to just talk to really high level people. Like for me, getting to talk to Kenny, I know not only did I learn a lot from that conversation, but I know that I will keep referencing back and going like, oh man, he said this and now I'm starting to understand it. And so, man, the benefit that I get from the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show is unbelievable. And it's funny because still to this day, we really don't truly monetize the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. You know, I put out two episodes a week on this podcast, and I run some commercials for Simplifying Jiu-Jitsu sometimes. And I obviously get benefit of it's built my brand, and it's allowed me to get to travel and to teach more. And you know, I'm so thankful for that. But that being said, we're actually going to do something, hopefully at the end of the year, probably sometime in January, depending on how much baby Matthew sucks up my time. But I'll just give you guys a little thought on it, or a little touch on it a little bit to let you be as excited as I am. If you are an I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show faithful, I think the biggest problem there is on the podcast right now is that there are 250 episodes, and there's so much good content, but it's still so broad. And for you to get all of that information, it would take you hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of listening. But what I am in the midst of working on right now is isuckatjiujitsushow.com. And what that will be is it will be a place for you to be able to ask questions for our Thursday episodes, because we're doing a lot more Q&A on the Thursday episodes. And so it'll be a really simple link for you to click. And anytime you have a thought, a question, a problem that happens, you're going to be able to go there and ask the question completely free. And hopefully it will end up on a Thursday episode and you will get that question answered. But what it also will have is a premium section for I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show listeners, where we take some of the big concepts and the big ideas and do episodes, big deep dives, where we do hours and hours of information on things like designated winner, things that people want to know more about. But I don't want to just throw out broadly to all the listeners, because we've already talked about it here and there so much, and just things about different training method, things about competition mindset. And we're going to be doing kind of like deep dive series. Sometimes I'll even have other guests on the show to help me if I feel like I don't have enough information on this. I need to talk to some people. And so this will be hopefully available sometime late December, mid January. But we will see when it is actually available. But I know that this website is going to kind of change the game for the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. And so for me, it will be the first time I actually put some thought into creating some monetization for the podcast. And so I know that, you know, like I kind of had referenced earlier that I don't think the podcast would exist if it wasn't for that conversation with Kenny Florian. And so getting to take this next step in the podcast is so exciting to me, and I'm just so happy about it. And I can't wait to share it with you guys. But that's all I have for you guys today. Don't forget, the chest over chest seminar is available at simplifyingjiujitsu.com. This will absolutely help you with guard passing, and it will convince you that I'm not just a good explainer of conceptual things on a podcast, but I'm actually a pretty good explainer of jiu-jitsu too. And I think you guys will really enjoy how I explain, how I teach jiu-jitsu. It's very unique. I would argue that you're probably never going to go to a seminar like a Josh McKinney seminar. Maybe that's not a good thing, but I think you guys will, a lot of you guys who like the show will really enjoy that seminar. And so, well, actually those seminars, there's three of them that you get all for the price of one. But that's where I'll leave you guys today. I have some good questions for the Thursday episode. If you guys want to send me a message, you can send me one on Instagram, send me one, josh@simplifyingjiujitsu.com. until we get the bat phone where you can just type in right on the website, that's going to be the best way to ask questions for these Thursday episodes. But besides that, that's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and most importantly, I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.